Welcome to the Chase Down on Leverage the Chat. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter did a great job filling in for me, taking on all the hosting responsibilities last week. I appreciate that, Carter. Thank you very much for holding it down.
I feel like there was a little sarcasm in your tone there.
No sarcasm at all.
You did a great job.
But no, there's no sarcasm, but I'm kind of like Derrick Rose. I recognize that team was doing better without me there, but in no way is that going to affect how I carry myself or lead to any reflection or improvement. So what you get is what you're going to get. Unfortunately, sure. That's the way it is.
Well, I was happy to fill in the meantime, and thanks to Mort for coming on. Anyway, we got a guest.
We do have a guest. I'm very excited about our guest this week. We have Matt Moore from CBS Sports. You may know him on Twitter as HP Basketball or that guy that hates your favorite team. Matt, how are you doing today?
What's up? How are you guys doing?
What's your most used emoji, Matt?
Recently, it's actually been the sick emoji. Like, I had the stomach bug last week.
Oh, my God, so... Justin.
Yes.
And so I was texting my wife. I was like, why is there not a vomit emoji? But as I typed that, my iPhone was like, here's the vomit emoji in case you want to use it. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what else does this thing have? And then I was like, well, I'm not really actually vomiting. I'm just really nauseous. And so I looked and like, there's actually like a green, like
green face.
Yes.
Turning ill face. And so I used that like a lot last week to describe how I was feeling.
I have a running bit that I just developed yet last week when Ryan Morton came on the pod because he apologized for being like stuffed up. And I just said like every podcast guest or host is just perpetually ill. So this was actually really big for me that you were like, actually, I'm getting over something.
Yeah, we were talking about it right before you came on the pod, and I was saying how I'm stuffed up, but the next level move is getting a Breathe Right nasal strip right now, so that's what's keeping me sounding good, and I'm surprised Breathe Right doesn't like sponsor just every single NBA podcast at this point.
Well, I have two kids, which means like I'm perpetually finding like strange new ways to get sick.
Just yeah, bizarre. It's a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm. Bizarre things that you catch. The worst part is for some reason, like my kids get sick and they're fine in like 3 days. Then my wife catches it and she gets like the long-term illness. So she'll be sick for like 2 weeks where it's just like mild discomfort and she's just grouchy. And then for some reason I catch it and it turns into outbreak. It's contagious. Like it's like you want to put the plastic sheeting around the room that I'm in. It's absolutely horrible how sick I get, which is it's always a pain because like I've got a new editor, Audie Joseph, who joined us from USA Today, and I'm like having to explain to him like I work constantly, like I will work through any sort of illness. So if I tell you I'm too sick to work, it basically means that like I feel so terrible that like I'm seriously like just wondering what is the point of going on at this point. And trying to explain that to my – I've had to do that with every new editor. It's like every time I get a new editor, I immediately get sick. And then for some reason I feel the need to like validate how hard I work even though they're like – I follow – like Audie had the perfect response. He's like, Matt, I follow you on Twitter. Like I'm aware of how much you think about basketball. It's fine. It's okay.
It's – now here's my question to your contagion problem. Like does your wife agree that you get the contagion? Because my fiance, like, she can be super sick, and I can be, like, pretty doting, taking care of her. Then I get sick, and it's like I'm the biggest baby in the world.
Yeah.
And I find it very unfair.
Yep.
Is your wife supportive?
I get the basically what happens is she'll test. Like, she'll poke and kind of, like, figure out exactly how sick I am. If, like, she volunteers – if she says like you can go get Chipotle if you want and I'm like no I'm way too sick, then she's like oh you're like really bad. If she's like well why don't you go get yourself a smoothie from the smoothie place you like, that'll make you feel better. If I'm like I can't even think about leaving the house, she's like oh you really are sick, okay never mind, are you okay?
That's fair. I like that she has to test it.
And like, we do that with the
she
kids
has her
too,
own
right?
internal review process.
Yeah, we do that with the kids too, right? Like today, like my son was didn't want to go to church, and he was like, "My stomach hurts. I don't feel good. I can't go." And I was like, "Okay, but if that happens, you don't get to be on the iPad the entire day. You just have to stay in bed." And he's like, "We can go." I was like, "Yeah, that's right."
Speaking of out of commission, we might as well talk about Derrick Rose. He is contemplating a return to the Cavs. there's no timetable currently, but he does have interest in rejoining the team. Obviously, the Cavs have looked considerably better without him. There's still issues, and the competition hasn't been great over this winning streak. But it's hard to imagine a role for Derrick Rose when he does come back, right?
I would legitimately be changing his security codes. It's Rose, so I would try something like, hey, we moved the arena. Here's the new address. Just go here. Like, that's what I would legitimately try. That's how bad he has been. I was talking about this today. The biggest problem that they have is their best thing going for them. Mm-hmm. Like, JR's playing better, and LeBron's decided to give a damn on defense. And they've gotten better contributions. Like, Crowder, I think, is starting to get better every game. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is, like, that bench unit is insane. Like, you put Dwayne Wade on the floor with Kyle Korver, and for some reason, that combination is just absolute handcuffs on everybody.
Right.
And they have so many good lineups that feature specifically those two and LeBron and pretty much any other two human beings you put on the floor with them. But the one thing you can't do is you can't throw a point guard in there. Like,
right.
You can't do that. So you basically need, like, you need Wade and James running point. And then Korver is a shooter. And then you fill him with another shooter. And then either Fry, who's a shooter, or Love, who's a shooter. And going that way has really worked for them defensively, which has been their big problem. And quite honestly, there's just zero that Rose provides on either end. Like, what's really good about these units? Oh, well, it's Wade who can slash, and then a bunch of really good shooters. Well, you throw Rose in there. Well, that's gone. Is he a great off-ball cutter? Nope. Okay, what's the other good thing about it? Well, they're playing absolutely insane defense. Absolutely everyone's defensive rating is below 100 when Dwayne Wade's on the court. Okay. Well, what happens if you had Derrick Rose? Well, that all goes to hell. So there's just zero reason for him to be in the rotation. They would be so much better off. He's on a minimum deal. He's in this weird place. I understand that they want to take care of him, and I appreciate that as, like, wanting to look out for a veteran guy. But this team has serious aspirations, and they do not have the time to mess around with this. They would be so much better off by letting him go and finding any D-League center that can rebound and jump at people. That's all they need. They would be so much better off served if they just went to the D-League and found literally any rim protector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a big part of it is, like, I think you're more willing to help Rose try to rehab and find his way if you also need help. And, like, the help that, like if the Cavs, like, ultimately tried their best to find a use for Rose, it would probably be, I mean, even though I don't think any of us really think he can do this, but if we're looking through rose-colored glasses, it would be bench, instant offense, score for, like, 15 minutes a night, and then never share the floor with LeBron. Like, just play only when LeBron is on the bench and have him provide the offense. But they found a good thing in those minutes. And it's almost a certainty that his return will ruin that good thing.
Pretty much.
And it's just not feasible. It's not doable. I understand why he's not retiring, because he's got 80 million reasons not to retire in that Adidas deal. But I asked this earlier, and I don't know if we have clarity. If he's just if he walks away from the game forever, he forfeits that $80 million.
Yeah, what from Adidas.
What if he's just a free agent? Like, if the Cavs cut him and no one signs him, does he still get his money? I don't really understand how it works.
I mean, I haven't seen it. I would assume that basically, as long as his career is ongoing, he's still going to get paid. There may be some sort of benchmark for games played that he has to fulfill. Like, he may have to fulfill, like, he has to appear in X NBA games. And I think if he gets let go, someone will probably go get him. There's, like, probably five teams I can think of whose front offices would be able to justify it based off of both position fit and where they're at in terms of desperation level. But, like, look, this is the end point. This is, like, the absolutely not. We all know, if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously know what the Cavs looked like last year whenever LeBron James was on the bench.
Yep.
Like, you know what that was. Okay. In 207 minutes, which is not a huge amount because it's so short in the season, but it's really big in terms of like where we're at now, and is a pretty okay sample size. Dwayne Wade is plus 7.5 when James is on the bench. Like, they are actually better with Dwayne Wade and LeBron on the bench than when they have LeBron and Dwayne Wade together. It's a plus 7.0 when he's on the court and a plus 7.5 when LeBron's on the bench. If you find any situation as the Cleveland Cavaliers in which you are not losing your ass off when LeBron James is sitting down, you hold on to – you freeze everything. You put everything in cryostasis. Like, you lock in all of your rotations. You don't do anything. I don't care what it's doing. Like, play Jeff Green. That's fine as long as nothing changes to disturb that number. All you need is for it to be like, oh, LeBron, you can sit down for 15 minutes and actually have – you can actually sit down for a while, because it's like – that's so important for the postseason, for the finals, for his career, for everything. And it's also really good for him, I think, if you're looking at the long-term goal of keeping him. Like, a big part of that's going to have to be his ability to look at this team and be like, oh – like, we're even good when I'm on the bench. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, this is nice, because LeBron's the kind of guy that, like, claps and cheers when he's sitting down. So, like, this is, like, a really big deal.
Yeah, I mean,
and I just would not do anything to disrupt it whatsoever. Like, Calderon can do his usual start for a few minutes and then play sparingly. It's fine. But, like, what you really want to keep is this crux where, like, Wade's coming in and all of a sudden they are just a death machine. And they need to keep that up as long as humanly possible.
It's amazing to me that, like, because, like, a lot of people might point to LeBron's minutes still being so high, but I don't know if they realize that his minutes are high because the starters are blowing leads or digging a hole. And then the bench comes in, they put him up 13, and then the Cavs inevitably have been letting teams back in the games with their starting units, not with LeBron on the bench. Yeah. And, like, when Isaiah Thomas returns, and I think we all know he's got limitations, but he's still – he was fifth in MVP voting last year. When he returns, if those starting lineups stabilize and become elite again, which, I mean, especially once Tristan Thompson comes back, you would think that can happen. Then this is crazy. Like, they can kill people, and LeBron will be able to get his rest that he hasn't been able to get all year.
Well, and here's one for you. In the first 10 games, LeBron was averaging 37.9 minutes, which let me put on the right voice. In year 15, Bill Simmons / Nick Wright voice, that's insane for him to be playing 38 minutes. Like, that's just what he – like, I mean, I'm honestly at the point where I know the situation Ty Lue was in, but you just have to be like, no, we're going to lose. It's fine. Like, I'd rather lose games than do this to him. But the next 10 games, in games 11 through 20, it was down to 36.9. He was playing one fewer minute a game, which doesn't sound like a lot, but look, it's you know, 10 minutes across 10 games, and these little things tick off, and that's just an average. So if he's playing, you know, more one night and then way less another, he's getting more rest. Now in the last three games, he's down to 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if you say, like, oh, your star player is playing 35 minutes a game, that's perfect. That's great.
Well, no, one of those games he got thrown out.
Yeah, I was about to say, the get thrown out of games after 28 minutes is a good strategy.
He should do that more often.
He should. He should intimidate refs by running at them and making them believe that he's going to physically harm them for some reason. It is nice to see how good the bench is going, and I think that's some of the concern about when the new pieces come back in, like when Tristan Thompson comes back, when Isaiah Thomas comes back, how that's really going to affect things. But to me, I think they need to go back to Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup instead of Jay Crowder. Like, right now, teams are putting centers on Crowder, and they're basically cheating off of him because he's only shooting 32.9% this year. I think it's clear that last year was a bit of an outlier where he shot 39.8%. Before that, his previous career high was 33.9%. So he's basically at his previous career high prior to last season. So if you're not really gaining the space that you had with the theoretical five shooters, there's really not a lot going on there. And we know that in the past, that starting lineup worked really well with Kyrie, JR, LeBron, Love, and Thompson. And there's no reason to think why that shouldn't work again this year with Isaiah Thomas in for Kyrie. Like, I think Thompson's going to be a good asset for him in the pick and roll to help get Thomas going. Love should help Thomas go as well with dribble handoffs, things like that. And really, then your only concern is, okay, Calderon's clearly a stopgap. He's just not going to play. And Crowder, I guess he's going to take some of Jeff Green's minutes, which Green has been playing well, but I think that there's the opportunity for Crowder to really make an impact there, and you just kind of go off what the opponents are doing.
Here's my only thing. This gets really tricky because if you mention the timing, people jump to a certain factor, and I'm not prepared to go in that direction. So I will just say this. Since the 2016 finals, Tristan Thompson has not been the same player.
No.
He just has not been the same dude. And I don't know what's going on. Because, like, I'm very high on Tristan. Like, I've always been high on Tristan. I was high on him in the draft. Mm-hmm. I was high on him in the early years because I was like, oh, hey, one of the Cavaliers actually gives a damn.
Yeah.
I was high on him as kind of a good piece in 2015. He was obviously incredible in 2016. And then things kind of fell apart for him, and he just wasn't the same guy last year, if that was cruising or whatever. But then the bigger issue was that in the finals, like, I was able to demonstrably point at things and be like, Tristan's costing them. Mm-hmm. Like, when Tristan's on the court versus the Warriors, it was a combination of things. He wasn't playing well. His instincts weren't going great. He looked sluggish and slow. And the Warriors also very clearly had, like, done the scouting report and been like, we can't get killed when Tristan's on the floor, because that's happened to us 2 years in a row.
Right.
Like, we have to win these matchups when Tristan's on the floor. And they targeted him and they took advantage of him and they beat him and they just beat him to pieces. And so right now, all of the data says that basically Jay Crowder is, like, not good. And I get that. I just continue to believe that if you're going to get where you want to go, they got to keep leaning away from high octane power, and they need to keep going more towards, they need as much switchability as possible. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems last year was, like, all right, you guys remember in 2016, like, one of the big things was they started switching Tristan on Curry and being like, no, you got him. Go ahead. Yep. Go ahead. Do your little dance around, shoot away from 35 feet. But Tristan's going to stay with you the whole way, and he's going to keep that big paw of his up the whole time. And he did a great job of that. Well, in 2016-17, the Warriors figured out, like, okay, we just have to drive past him. And Tristan wasn't able to contain. And so my thing is, like, the Cavs need switchability. They've got to have switchability at all levels, not just for the Warriors, but just in general. I think they're going to need that. I just think mm-hmm. they're going to need that switchability. And I don't have as much faith in Tristan as I used to. If Thompson comes back and all of a sudden he's able to, like, rediscover this, what he was in 2016, he plays like that, I think you're absolutely correct. But until Tristan's able to get back to that point, Crowder at least gives you positional flexibility to a degree that you are, you know, if centers are posting up on him, you're still dealing with such a lower points per possession mark than if you've got guards that are taking him off the dribble, then the help has to come. Now the shooters are open. That all creates, like, a cascading effect that's much worse. I would stick with Jay until Tristan's able to prove conclusively that he's back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that either decision you make has a series of pretty obvious drawbacks. I think if you stick with Crowder, the big drawback for me, one, is that it's hard to keep Channing Frye in the rotation, who's been really, really good all year. Though, I mean, you know, you'll live with that. You know, it's not like a backbreaker. Another thing is I'm worried about Kevin Love holding up. He's working really, really, really hard against these behemoth guys. Like, it's not – we like to joke the center is gone, but, like, there was, like, a four-night stretch where he had to battle Howard, had to battle Embiid, had to battle Drummond. And, like, that, with his injury history, with his back problems, it just – I think there's some concern there that he could wear down. But then you go the other way and you start Thompson, and it's like – when you start Thompson again, LeBron now either has to guard the best defender or the best offensive player on the other side of the ball, or JR has to do it and probably be a little overmatched again. And that's a nice thing about Crowder, is that he does kind of give LeBron that break. And I don't think there's a really easy answer. I think the answer gets easy just depending on who plays better. Like, I know that's not a very sexy answer, but, like, and also, I mean, Matt, I am interested in this from your perspective, because you talked about that bench lineup and how you don't mess with it no matter what. Is inserting Tristan Thompson into Channing Frye's minutes, does that mess up the juju there? And would it be better just to put Tristan in the starting lineup and let that bench unit cook the exact way it has been prior?
There are things in basketball I just do not understand. Channing Frye's defensive impact this season is one of them. I've watched the clips. I've gone through and seen it. And every single time, like, I've been worried about this. I'm worried about the Channing Frye minutes. I've been worried about this since they traded for him. I never understood it. And it was bad because what winds up happening is because you critique a decision or a guy, the label gets out like, wow, you really hate Channing Frye. And I'm like, I love Channing Frye. Like, the guy came back from a heart condition. Everyone loves him. He's like such a good guy. He's a stretch shooting five, and he was doing this way before that was okay to do. Like, Channing Frye's awesome. But for the love of God, what do you need that on this team for? Like, why don't you have a better rim protector? And yet the defensive numbers bear out time and time again that this is working. I think that maybe moving Tristan into that role could be okay. It's an interesting. So here's like the question, right? So the strength of that unit is defense. What happens if instead of Frye taking three pointers, it's Thompson inside? And so as a result, you have less spacing. So you have more contested shots, which means you have guys getting back not as often, which means your transition defense suffers.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a valid point there, and Thompson might be able to bolster that. Part of my concern, though, like, I think the points you raised about Thompson are valid. Last season, I think he was good through January. He had shown growth as a rim protector, and then the reports started coming out that he was dealing with knee tendonitis, and he just wasn't the same player. And with Kevin Durant, with LeBron being on Kevin Durant, that forced Tristan to guard Draymond full time. He was clearly exposed in that matchup, and he was once again hurt to start this season playing through an injury and just hadn't been the same guy. And if Thompson isn't the same guy, the Cavs have to look for an alternative, which is part of why I think it's best to put him with the starters in a situation where he's excelled in the past and try to optimize that, because you need to find out right away whether or not he's going to be that same guy, because if not, you need to make some changes. Like, as good as the Cavs have been throughout this winning streak, the starters, their defensive rating is still 112.1. And when you consider they've only played two teams in the top 15 in offensive rating, which is Detroit and the Knicks, both at below 106, that doesn't bode well for the future. Like, that's really concerning that as soon as the competition heats up, the starters weren't playing good defense against bad teams, and it's just going to get ugly. So I think Thompson...
Isaiah Thomas will not help.
No, and Isaiah Thomas is not going to help, but... Oh, I mean, it can't be that much worse than Calderon, but I think Thompson at least gives you the potential to be better defensively, and I'm all about finding out what you have, because it's a win-now situation, and if Tristan's primarily playing on the bench... If you need to call on him at some point to play with the starters, and it's either make or break, you want to know what he's going to bring beforehand.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt.
I mean, I guess part of it is, I think if you're trading Tristan, you save Tristan in case Marc Gasol comes available.
Right. No.
And that's like that to me is the only scenario in which you deal Tristan, just because, like, it's tough. I think here's the deal. I don't think you're going to get great return on Tristan because he's a rim protector in a league where if you can't shoot, it doesn't matter. And we saw that last year, right? Where, like, Tristan, you're right that he fell off with the knee injury, but it's also just, you know, the effectiveness of those guys has gone way, way down. You're just not seeing anybody outside of Rudy Gobert really able to impact the game as a rim protector and create a lockdown defensive system because of how much you need to still be able to switch on the perimeter anyway.
But isn't that a knee thing? I mean, I don't know if that's a style thing. I think that's his knee hurt. He wasn't able to move as well as he did because he's never been an elite rim protector. He got okay at rim protecting last year and mostly had utility as someone who switches and was
right as a pick and roll defender. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also tough. There's a correlation between offense and defense. I think that's kind of the trick that you have to manage. And that's where I think it might get a little complicated. I do have a kind of a moderate buy low candidate for you guys to think about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it Nerlens Noel?
it is not. Let's say the Orlando Magic go in the absolute tank. Let's say that they've lost, like, I think they won today versus the Knicks, who were without Porzingis, but they've lost, I think, like nine before that. Yeah. Nikola Vucevic is only on contract through 2019.
I can't do it.
No, yeah. Listen. You got to listen, though. You got to listen, though.
Okay.
When Vogel got there, like I had always liked Vucevic, but then I'd been like, well, he can't defend, so it doesn't matter. Vogel got there and he knew that the knock on him was his defense. Nikola Vucevic is a quality defender. Like, he's just like, it's the same kind of deal as Greg Monroe, where he learned how to just basically, if you can contain in the pick and roll, as long as you're smart enough not to blow rotations, that's all you got to do. And you could be a help as long as you have the size. Like, Vucevic has gotten to be, like, he is legitimately, to me, I like having him on the floor defensively more than I like them having Biombo.
Yeah, but
he's shooting 36% from three this season.
See, my thing is, he's improved defensively, but is that going to matter? Can he play defense against the Warriors? Because I still don't think the Cavs are necessarily going to, as long as they have health, they're not going to face too much competition in the East, especially with Gordon Hayward out. Like, sure, it's going to help throughout the regular season, but when you have finite assets and you really don't have a lot of trade pieces here, like, is it worthwhile? Is it going to help at all against the Warriors if you're giving up pieces to get Vucevic in there?
I think that you can give up almost nothing and be able to get him back. I think if we're talking about Vucevic in this situation, it's like, it's February and the Magic are completely in disarray and there's absolute chaos and they're just like, we just need a clear salary and start over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're taking a very low flyer, and at 12.7, he's actually 12.25. That's affordable. You could probably put together some sort of package to be able to acquire that, mm-hmm. Without having to give up too much. Centered around primarily Iman. And the thing is, with the Warriors, when they go small, you're going small, so it doesn't matter. There's no center you're going to probably counter that with. Like, realistically, if they go with the death ball line, which they actually don't do much anymore, right? But when they do, the Cavs are probably going to counter with Love at center. That's like what they're going to do, because even with Tristan, we saw, like, last year, like, it was really bad. Maybe if Tristan plays better, sure, but you would still have that option if you wanted to try it. Like, I wouldn't recommend giving up Tristan for Vucevic. That's not what I'm suggesting at all.
Mm-hmm.
What I am suggesting is, like, if you're able to have him out there and he counters JaVale, where now all of a sudden, instead of them having a stretch five, you have the stretch five, and JaVale's not going to cover him. Because JaVale's never going to do that. JaVale's never going to cover that. Like, you'd be able to run pick and pop with Vucevic when JaVale's out there and get an open three every single time. Same thing with Zaza. You'd be able to do that every single time. He gives you a guy that's a smart player, that's savvy, plays better defense, and can hit threes. I'm just saying, as a rotation, like, alternative to Fry, I think it would be worth at least exploring.
Yeah, how would he fit next to Paul George, though?
Yeah, I was about to say, it doesn't really matter. They're going to trade all their assets for Paul George, Matt.
Right, of course. No, I understand.
Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites?
I didn't know that, Carter.
Justin, I think you did know that, because you have been raking this year on draft. Draft.com, it's our new favorite fantasy site and app. There's no more getting crushed by the pros, where they have their algorithms and put in a billion different lineups. It's not just me. More than a million people have downloaded Draft already.
You know what? That's a good point about the algorithms. Take fantasy sports, take daily fantasy sports back from the nerds. No more spreadsheets. Just pick whoever the best player available is. It's the rise of the basketball bros.
And that's really what this pod's about. Drafts take, they say, up to an under 5 minutes, but honestly, it's like 2 to 3.
Yeah, it depends. See, that's the thing. You can enter a draft for as little as $1, and you can pick how many people you're playing against. You could do one-on-one, head-to-head draft. You can go in with 50 people, and I'm assuming those are the ones that take a long time, but you can really customize the experience to whatever you want.
Yep, and We have a special deal for anyone who wants to support the pod. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use our promo code or you don't really like us. Promo code THECHASEDOWN. That's all one word, THECHASEDOWN. You can play in a real money draft for free just by using our promo code THECHASEDOWN. But, Justin, it gets better.
Oh, does it get better? Oh, yeah, that's right. The draft is so sure that you'll love it that they will give ChaseDown listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. That's right. Not only do you get a free game, but you get money back if you don't love your experience. So you really have no reason to not try it.
Yeah, and once again, if you don't support it, it's a direct insult to Justin and I. So please search Draft in your app store. Go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code THECHASEDOWN. I did want to go back to this current Cavs team and go back to Wade, because I'm interested to hear, because I've kind of been, if you paid any attention to my Twitter feed, I've just been like tweeting out Dwayne Wade facts just nonstop, because I've just been blown away by how fun he's been to watch from the perspective of a Cavs fan. His lineup data is great. All his defensive numbers are great. He's shooting pretty inefficiently from the field. Like, his true shooting is pretty poor, even if you don't count the first really ugly stretch of the season. I mean, do you feel like from your side of things, what Wade's doing is sustainable? And is he someone who's going to continue to anchor really, really good lineups for them? Or do you think there's a drop off coming here?
I think there's probably a drop off coming just because the defense is so good. It's just counterintuitive to look at what he and Korver are at for a defensive rating and go, oh, well, that'll hold. No. I mean, it's the same thing with the Celtics where, you know, I understand how excited they are, but do you really think the group of guys who can't rent the car are actually going to be able to hold this kind of defensive rating? Because that's not going to hold. It's just not going to hold. And on the other end of it, like, these two AARP members are probably not going to be able to hold it either. What I do think you're seeing – what you're seeing with Wade is you're seeing the benefits of having a knowledge base. And this is something I talk about a lot that I think gets so lost. We talk about defensive ability in terms of, can you move your feet? Do you have good instincts? Are you athletic? Can you hang with guys? Can you block shots? These kind of things. If you're Curry, can you make steals? Do you have quick hands? Wade has quick hands, and he still has athleticism even at this point in his career, even though it's like severely sapped. The biggest thing, though, is like Wade's smart, and he
recognizes. So smart, man. It's crazy. On both ends. On both ends, he's so smart.
Yeah.
It's just like savvy all over the place. Like,
and he knows how to manipulate you into doing what he wants you to do. And if you are not a veteran player that knows how to counter that and stay out of his traps, he's going to spring it on you. Like, LeBron's averaging 8.7 assists this season, which, by the way, that's insane. But also, like, Wade's averaging 3.9. For a team that has been so bad at having any other playmaker in recent years, even when certain people that question the geometry of the planets is on the floor, the great and wonderful playmaker who's averaging the same number of assists as he did last year per 100 possessions, they haven't really had another playmaker on the floor, like a real playmaker. And to me, I think Wade really is a playmaker. They had assist makers. That guy was an assist maker. But Wade, to me, he's able to see angles and create things and really absolutely just generate looks and things and make plays with his confidence. Like, there's a lot of his confidence, right, where Wade's willing to try things because he's at a point in his career where he's like, no, I pulled these things off before, so I can get away with trying them. Where a lot of guys are like, I can't make that pass because if I screw up, that's going to cost me minutes. Wade doesn't have to worry about that. Like, Wade's going to get minutes no matter what. He's LeBron James's buddy, and this is the Cavs. He's going to get minutes. And so he's able to create those kind of things. I think defensively, I'm still waiting to kind of go back and see if I can't sink my teeth into what it is that they're doing that's creating so many problems. There are with a lot of things, there are problem areas that tend to spring up. Like, I started looking at, like, what's been, like, the stuff behind the Cavs, right? And so I was like, okay, well, in this stretch, since the winning streak, like, are they allowing fewer threes? No, they're averaging the same amount. Huh. So are they making them? No, they're just missing a lot more than they were before. Now, that could be like they're contesting way better and running off shots and stuff like that. That doesn't sound like Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver stuff, does it? Like, it doesn't sound like Dwayne Wade and Kyle Korver are, you know, leaping through the air gracefully, flying like Jordan to swat away three pointers. That's not what's happening.
Korver's sneaky athletic, though.
Yes.
Four blocks last night.
I started looking at things like turnovers, and nope, there's still like all of the stats are relatively the same. It's things like, oh, opponents are shooting like 8% worse at the free throw line. So there's a lot of concern. There are reasons, if you want to find concern, there are reasons to be concerned that this is a little bit smoke and mirrors and it's going to catch up to them. Like
the nice thing though, is that they can afford that. Like they're beating teams with Wade on the bench or with Wade on the floor and LeBron on the bench. Even if they, I mean, how many times last year did we say if they could just break even? Like, if they could just break even with LeBron on the bench, that would be so important. And, like, you can go from outscoring teams by, like, 6 points per 100 possessions down to two, and that's fine.
I do, though, I think this is my only thing. We saw this last year. So they went all offense with how they approached everything last year. Obviously, like they were just like, we are going to outscore teams and it's going to be amazing. Look how many threes we can hit. And my whole thing going to the finals was like, you cannot get into a shootout with the Warriors. You're never going to win that. Even if you're really good, you can't win that. They have Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. Like they are going to be able to limit you with their defense in ways you cannot limit them. And that's going to wind up catching you. You have to have an identity as a really great defensive team. And so for me, you know, if it's like, well, they come back a little bit, but, you know, they're still outscoring teams by so much. Like, I worry so much less about net rating with the Cavaliers. Like, teams are trying to make the playoffs, I worry about net rating with. Like, just figure out how to get to plus three. Just figure out how to get to plus three per 100 possessions. It doesn't matter. That will probably get you in. But with the Cavs, I'm genuinely like, no, you need to legitimately have a top 10 defense if you want to have any chance against this team. That is your only hope, is if you're able to say, we can go in there and we can play with you, because the only team I really believe that has the offensive firepower to hang with Golden State's Houston. And that's just because of their style of play and their shooters. And as great as the Cavs are, and they have so many weapons, and they do, their weapons are a little bit more coverable than what the Rockets are. So, like, to me, they still have to get to a place where they are defined by their defense. And that's been what's happening lately. But we really got to see that hold up as they start to play the better offensive teams.
Yeah.
I will note, Houston still doesn't have LeBron, and LeBron is the only star that I guess Kawhi also, but LeBron reliably destroys the Warriors on offense. The Warriors have made their money, cut their teeth on destroying often opposing stars. They ruined Blake Griffin. Like, that's what they do. But LeBron, they cannot stop. Iggy is the closest thing to a LeBron stopper, and LeBron goes crazy.
I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you in total that having LeBron matters, but I think we saw last year, like, the whole thing going into last year was like, I heard this all the time, which is, okay, sure, they've got a top five defense and a top five offense and maybe the best offense we've ever seen. And sure, they've got better depth. And sure, the Cavaliers can't defend. And sure, all of their shooters are barely alive. But they've got LeBron, and LeBron can tear them apart. And what happened? LeBron tore them apart offensively, but Kevin Durant cooked his ass on defense, and he did. Like, LeBron seriously got cooked in games one and two. I broke it down, and it was shocking to me because I've always been like, LeBron, no one's going to beat LeBron when he's locked in. Kevin Durant cooked him in games one and two. Like, he beat him off screens and caught him napping several times. And this is why
that's not what I was saying, though, to be clear.
I understand.
I was just talking about their offensive output. I would take the Cavs' offense over Houston's offense against the Warriors specifically.
I mean,
because of LeBron and because there's the track record. They scored 113 points per 100 possessions last year in the finals.
I mean, I would point you to how Harden's done against them historically. James Harden has done, like, that series in 2015, right, where they won in five games. Games one and two, I was at an Oracle, and they were nail biters, and both of them went down, and both of the coin flips went Golden State's way, and it broke Houston. And literally, they didn't get back over it for a year and a half. But the other thing is, like, now, it's not about the individual star power. It's about how do you play collectively. And like the Cavaliers offense is legitimately great, and they put up really good numbers last year. It's a matter of like Houston has the potential to be unbelievable. Like their ceiling is incomprehensible. I mean, they put up 90 this year and a half. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So they're crazy fun to watch. And they haven't been fun to watch in the past, but they are legitimately awesome this year.
And it's tough because, you know, like, look, is LeBron James a better player than James Harden? Like, why? Yes, you are correct. LeBron James is a better player than James Harden. But in terms of like what they bring to the table, you know, they have, I think, a different makeup of how their identity is, especially this year, because the different, like, that's everyone's missing it this year, is like the Rockets this year are the identity the Cavs need to get to. Not with the speed, you don't have to play fast, but the Rockets were literally like, no we think we can add defenders and still keep up our shooting because we have such great playmakers. And they did that, like Mba Mute and PJ Tucker, and it's just like it works. And they are so good defensively at so many spots that they can play James Harden and Ryan Anderson and survive defensively. Versus like if you put LeBron James on the floor, Derrick Rose, turns out you can't survive defensively.
Yeah, that's once again, like I totally see the case for Houston over Golden State, or over Houston over Cleveland as a threat to Golden State in totality. I was just talking specifically about the offensive end and how, despite all the limitations the Cavs had, they scored at an unbelievably efficient rate last year in the finals. That's my only point.
Yeah, you're right, but I think
their defense was ass. That is for sure.
And that's the thing. That's what I was trying to. That's what. It's kind of what I got to in the beginning, right? Like, I don't have doubt that Cleveland can score on Golden State. I'm not like, oh, you're not going to be able to score efficiently. The problem is that versus Golden State, you have to score so efficiently in order to keep up. And if you don't have the defense, you have no chance.
Right.
Sure. Like, you that, still that, have that. I never would have disputed. That's not what. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting problem. But like to that point, like, don't you think that they should? If they are, you know, you were kind of floating those Vucevic trades. Don't you think that in that case, like, if you want them to move kind of towards that Houston paradigm, shouldn't they keep any and all powder they have dry for another wing?
No, I think they should keep all their powder dry for Marc Gasol.
Thank you.
You're with Justin. I can't get behind it.
No, I'm all in on that, especially because you look at how well Memphis has played the Warriors in the past, and I think the Cavs' way to beat the Warriors is playing that slowdown style. That's how LeBron likes playing. And you look at how, like, even Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph, how successful those two were against the Warriors. And I think Gasol and Love together would be able to really be a force there. I'm all in on Gasol. I think, like, he's a stretch five, fantastic passer, and he's a great defender. Like, I know he's not having as great of a season this year, but no, I'm all in on Gasol. Like, I'd offer Thompson and the Brooklyn pick for him.
What's the reservation on it?
Pardon me?
My reservations?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, beyond, if we're just talking short term, because I think the long term reservations are obvious, aka age and, you know, just natural decline. If we're talking short term, I have a couple reservations. One, I'm nervous about the foot speed of a Love Gasol front court defensively. Like, Gasol, I think, is still a really, really cagey defender, but I think it's fair to say he's not quite as quick as he once was. And that's no slight. He's just not quite as quick as he once was. So I'm worried about that defense. And then I'm worried about if he's not turning the Cavs into an elite defensive team, is he going to be utilized properly on offense within the context of the Cavs offense to make it worthwhile? If they're just posting him up like he's an old school center in the 90s, and they're not utilizing his passing and cutting off of him off the elbow and running a ton of DHO, which they don't do, and they never have, and they never did it with Love, as much as we've screamed for them to try it. Why should I think that they're going to do it now? Like, I just don't all the way trust that they can get that fully integrated, fully built in half a season. And with a move like Gasol, he's old, so you have to, like, you can't wait. Like, you can't take like a year and a half to figure this out, because by the time you figure it out, it might be too late and he'll have taken those 2-3 steps back, and that's enough to make it not worth it.
Let me sell you on it.
Sure. Hit me. Justin's been trying. I see the case. I don't think it's stupid, to be clear.
Well, I want to address your concerns because they're valid. You talked about defensive mobility. So the big key here is that we get lost. One, I will guarantee you that if he got traded to Cleveland Cavaliers, all of a sudden his diet's going to start improving. And, oh, wow, Marcus Gasol has lost like 10 pounds this month. That's crazy. That's what would happen. That is absolutely 100% what would happen. The second thing is that what Gasol has always been really good at, what has actually made him notable, he's not like he's some sort of superb shot blocker. It's not like he's like Whiteside swatting things out of the air. He's not Dwight Howard. What he's actually really great at is he's able to hedge pick and rolls all the way to the corner so that the guard, if a guard gets hung up, it's okay. And two, if the guard just switches, he can literally force the ball out of their hands because of his ability to hedge. If you want to talk about that being mitigated with his age, here's the trick. So much of that gets down to not how fast you are. It's about your anticipation. It's about being able to understand and time that pick and roll move so that you are out ahead of it and you are one step. And because of his size and how long his strides are, that's always given him an advantage. It's been one of the best things about him. I think that particularly this team, I think he and Wade with LeBron on the bench would slay. I think they would kill teams. Because if you remember – Once Dwayne Wade was like, okay, we're really keeping Hassan Whiteside. Like, we're really keeping Hassan Whiteside. You're sure? Like, there's no way we're trading him. Once it was like, okay, no, we're keeping Hassan Whiteside. All right. Then Wade started working with Whiteside and teaching him where to be and how to play and helped him get better to where that's what part of what earned him his max extension that summer, or his re-sign, his new deal that summer, was like Wade really worked with him and stayed on him, and Wade's great with guys about that. Now, Gasol, he's not going to need to do that with, and Gasol is going to recognize like, oh, I can't slouch off here. Like, I got Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. I don't get the slack. So he's going to bring it every single night, and he's going to bring it when he needs to. And having that other offensive weapon, especially like if you think about what he's been able to do in terms of spreading the floor, it's like, oh, hey, what if we had like, and he's not as good as Channing Frye, but like, oh, what if we had like a Channing Frye type weapon who could also completely destroy any mismatch? Because Gasol is one of the few dudes in the league right now, because there are just not a lot of them, where if you do put a smaller guy on him, Gasol will actually exploit the mismatch. He won't exploit mismatches that are natural because that's just not in his DNA. But if you can recognize – if he actually recognizes like, no, I actually need to score on this guy because they have made a mistake by putting this person on me, he actually will respond to that and really make them pay for it. So all of those things, I think, especially with how smart he is and all those things. Plus, with when his contract expires, you can really kind of live with it and it'll be okay. And I don't think you have to give up the Brooklyn pick to get him. If things get to the point where Memphis trades him – which they're not at yet, but if Memphis does get to the point where Memphis trades him, you can do it for Tristan Thompson and a protected first round pick from the Cavs.
Oh, yeah. Snap. I'd be all in on that.
That's a no brainer then.
I've long said that Marc Gasol is basically the center version of J.R. Smith. He just needs LeBron to keep him accountable and keep him honest and focused.
Okay, I'm throwing up. I'm making the throw up emoji.
It's your favorite emoji.
Marc Gasol, J.R. Smith.
I kind of like the idea.
Like,
yeah, go ahead, Carter.
Okay. I never thought it was dumb that Justin had this idea. I mean, I understood the potential benefits and the potential risks scare me. But I mean, there's no doubt that if they traded for him, they would be better. And better in a not insignificant way. It's just the extent to which how much better they are to make it worth sacrificing that long-term utility. But yeah, I mean, it would be really fun. And if they don't have to give up the Brooklyn pick, I mean, that's free. That's, you do that without even thinking. And I love Tristan. I think he's been great for this team. But yeah, I think that you would do that without really any hesitation whatsoever.
I kind of like the idea of this pod going into Matt Settle's arguments between us, because the other area of disagreement that we have, and I've conned some flack for this, is I have a lot of concerns about Isaiah Thomas's offense against the Warriors, because everyone talks.
That's a chops disagreement. That's not a me disagreement. I'm ambivalent.
Okay. Well, anyways,
I'm still interested.
Let me know if I'm crazy here, because I watched a lot of Isaiah Thomas against the Warriors over the last few years after the trade went down, because I'm bored and I have no life in the summer. And a lot of what the Warriors did against him, it was similar to what the Warriors did against Kyrie. They trapped him. They tried to make him make mistakes. And I mean, in the first two games the last two finals, Kyrie really struggled against that. And with Isaiah Thomas, I think he's going to see a lot of the same defense, because they can guard LeBron one-on-one with Durant. And the length of the Warriors and what they can do defensively. Thomas just hasn't had a good game against the Warriors. And he struggles to score. He struggles to get to the free throw line. He struggles to get penetration. And it's given the what you're losing defensively by having him on the court, it just makes me nervous about how effective he's going to be against the Warriors.
The Warriors are going to try and do what they do to them every single year, which is the same thing they did in 2015. The Warriors know that if they make LeBron beat them 1-on-5, that they're going to come out ahead. That their entire ethos is we're never going to load up on him to the point where it exploits everything else. And what he did in 2016 is a testament to his incredible greatness, as well as, by the way, the fact that Kyrie was able to shake all that and score on his own. When those two got going, they were able to score enough to generate what they needed. But as always, the defense was also there. The splits in the first three games versus the last four were extreme in terms of the rating. I think with Isaiah, what they're going to do, you're right that they're going to trap him and they're going to try and neutralize him. And the problem with Thomas is that when he's stifled, there's just not a lot else that he does for you. There are players that if you try and neutralize them, they're going to punish you for it. Curry's one of them. If you throw the double team at Curry, Curry is going to start finding ways to not only just make the simple, easy pass to Draymond on the short roll. Once you start adjusting to that, Curry's going to find ways to get to a spot where he can make another pass that leads to the lob or forces the pull down from the corner to open up a corner three. Curry's able to become more of a playmaker when he's called upon. One of the things that was impressive about Isaiah last year, and this is something that was missed because they didn't play the Warriors after this happened. Isaiah went through this entire season and was scoring and it was awesome and the Celtics were rolling and yada, 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 and he's an MVP candidate. And those of us in the know were still but they're not beating the Cavs. That's not happening. But what was notable is in that last Cavaliers game that they had, Celtics versus Cavaliers in the regular season before you guys were up 50 on them in the playoffs, I was really struck by the fact that in that game, Isaiah Thomas, they threw everything at Thomas. The Cavaliers threw the kitchen sink at him. And so he decided instead of forcing it, he was going to make them pay by passing. And so he started finding open shooters. And Crowder was actually one of them. And LeBron was just, as I've noted in the past, just checked out on his assignment on these shooters that he's been on. And this continues to be a problem with him. It's been better the last couple of games, I've noticed. But Thomas was able to make them pay. So that's going to be the real key is look, can Isaiah Thomas go into a game with the Warriors and then just be like, I'm going to have 11 assists and 3 hockey assists. If he has that kind of a game, you can punish them just by your presence, just by the fact that Isaiah Thomas is so good. If he's so good because he's healthy or he just looks good enough and he's scoring and the Warriors have to commit that kind of energy in it and he makes them pay for that decision versus needing LeBron to make them pay for that decision, then you can still survive. The key is not going to be what Isaiah Thomas can do individually. It's what can Isaiah Thomas do as a threat to make the Cavs offense what it's going to need to be the Warriors.
I have a question for both of you. Just a simple little over-under. Over-under, Isaiah Thomas plays, assuming the Cavs make the finals again, Isaiah Thomas plays 33 minutes a game, over under against the Warriors.
Under.
I agree. I think he's going to have to be they're going to have to upsize a lot, and they're just going to have to pick their spots with Thomas.
It'll be the Kevin Love situation. If it's a game where it's going well, you keep him in. If it's not, he's going to have to be ready to sacrifice the same way that Love has in the past. Because Love had a few effective games last year in the finals, but when he's not effective, he has to be prepared to sit. And I don't know how Isaiah is going to respond to that, but that's what's necessary. Because, I mean, if it comes down to it, the Cavs might have to go with Wade at point guard just for defensive reasons, with Wade, JR, Crowder, LeBron, and either Tristan or try to work someone else into there. But that might be what they need to do some nights.
Let's say that the Cavs make the finals, and to get there, they face the Wizards in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they win that series 4-2.
Okay.
The difference what that will happen is what the Wizards will do is the Wizards will see Isaiah Thomas, and they'll say, we are going to punish that mismatch. We almost worked last year when it was Isaiah versus us in Boston. We're going to do that this time. So we're going to put Isaiah and we're going to force him to switch, and then we're going to have Wall or Beal post him into oblivion. And the problem is that strategy never works because post-ups are inherently inefficient, and most of the time the players doing them are not guys that take them routinely, and they're so amped up to take advantage of a mismatch that it winds up backfiring. What the Warriors will do is the Warriors will force the switch, and they'll get Kevin Durant on him, but they won't have Kevin Durant back him into the basket. Durant will take the same shots that he would take over any other opponent because he's a 7-foot every guard, every player, every omni-forward. He'll do the same shots, and when the help comes, they'll punish Cleveland for that mismatch. That's the gap between the Warriors and the Wizards. The Wizards will try and punish you for having a player on the floor. The Warriors will punish you for having that player on the floor by forcing you to let them take the easiest shot that they want anyway.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I totally agree. And I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum. Justin and I have locked in on this. Is last in years past, they've shoved JR into Curry and said, go do your best, JR. Then they've stuck Kyrie on Clay and said, go do your best, Kyrie. Kyrie is 6'3". Isaiah Thomas is 5'9". Like, and you cannot hide Isaiah on anyone. Clay doesn't even have to change. And as you said, Clay's not going to have to change his offense. He'll just take the same three he takes in the corner. But Isaiah's contest doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, Isaiah could be standing on his shoes and wouldn't affect the shot.
There are a lot of ways that, like, Wade concerns me in this matchup, and I'm going to be fascinated to see Christmas. Because, like, the idea of Wade having to follow Clay around screens is really concerning. But then the idea of, like, okay, like, put Wade on Curry, and then they force the switch, and so Wade goes on to Draymond. And I'm not worried about Draymond versus Wade in the post because Draymond won't take that shot, but – then like Draymond popping and Wade will let him shoot. But that's actually okay because you want Draymond shooting. You always want Draymond shooting.
Yep.
There are ways that this gets concerning, but like the more that you kind of get into it, it's like, look, if Wade really locks in, if Wade's just like, I am going to play good defense in this game and that's where my focus is going to be, he can give them something that if he's feeling up for it, he can give them something that the Warriors are going to be bothered by. Because he's smart and he'll make the tactical decision. Like, he's not going to get if he loses his guy, it's because he's complaining about a call on the offensive end. He's not going to lose Draymond Green on a back cut. He's not going to lose Draymond Green, you know, getting sealed. He's not going to lose Klay Thompson just outright. It's because he got distracted by something else. I worry about him going over screens, but, you know, look, if you put LeBron on Draymond or on KD, and you put Wade on Curry, like, I like that cross switch pretty well. That's not bad.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, this is something that we've talked about in the past, even going into last finals, is I kept saying, like, everyone on the Cavs is going to have to be like 10 to 15% better than they normally are. And like, that's still true. Like, you're not going to beat the Warriors playing as good as you normally are.
And they'll need to play 10 to 15% worse than they normally are.
Sure. Like, you need those things to break. But I think Wade is capable of giving you that extra 10%, kind of like what you were saying, Matt, more than most guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've long made the kind of the comparison between Ginobili and Wade. In 2013, when both of them kind of struggled in the middle of their final series, I wrote this big thing about, like, look, when guys get older, they don't lose their top-end ability. Like, they still have nights. There are still nights even at, like, what, 39, 40, where Manu still looks like Manu. Like, he still looks like Manu.
In the playoffs last year. He was going crazy.
And there are some nights where Wade still looks like Wade. What age robs you of is the consistency. Like, I think, honestly, I've said this. Like, I think we're starting to see that with LeBron, but we're only seeing it on the defensive end in very specific situations. Like, we're seeing it very gradually. I did this whole thing on their defense when it was so crappy to start the season. And it's like, a lot of what it comes down to is LeBron thinks he can make closeouts that he can't. And that's like a very specific athletic move that if you ask, like, well, can he never make that? No, if he's ready to make that move, then yeah, he's still going to close out with ferocity and he can block a shot from Curry. That's how fast he is. But it's the consistency that gets drained. And that's what, like, as LeBron gets older, that's what's going to go for him, is it's going to be like, oh, it's no longer 25-7-7 every single night. It starts to be like, oh, he had a night where it was only like 24-2. And then it just kind of slides down from there. The consistency.
And eventually he's Jose Calderon.
Right. And then, you know, but at the same time, like, Wade still, I think, has the ability to, if the body will be there for him, he is a guy that competitiveness really does matter. Like, we talk of, you know, I break down numbers and analytics and on off numbers and X's and O's, but, like, look, some of this, a lot of the time, it really is competitiveness and intensity and an ability to, like, step up in that moment. And Wade is a guy you want in that moment.
It's amazing that we're talking about him this way 4 years after the 2014 finals, or what will be 4 years.
I love it. It's so great. He's like, he's such an underappreciated legend. Like, it's just unbelievable how much, like, his start. Because the thing is, like when he, that last year in Miami after LeBron had left, like, he was still dragging that team to the playoffs. Like, he was
and almost taking down Toronto.
Like, there's so many ways that he is still, like, a meaningful complimentary player. And there are nights when I'm like, woof, like, oh God, like, wait,
I got it tonight.
And there's nights where, like, I'm just like, oh, that's no, why must you get old, Dwayne Wade? But then there are nights when I'm like, oh, he looks the same. He's just doing the same thing.
Yeah. I think that's why I've been so kind of obsessive about him this season, and my writing and my tweeting is like, he's just such a joy to watch this year when it's going well, and he's such a smart player. And, like, this is something Justin loves to say, is smart players learn how to play in whatever situation you put them in. Like, Wade figured it out. Like, it took him a minute, but then he figured it out. And just the little things that you don't see not really smart players do. Like, when he's running the pick and roll and he waits that extra beat before attacking to let the defense make its commitment, and then he burns them. Like, dumb players don't do that. They just go at the same speed. Like, his change of speed game is great. He's just been a joy to watch this season, and I'm really, really glad that this Wade Cavaliers era wasn't depressing, because 3 games in, it looked like it could be a huge bummer.
Right.
No, it's... He's been exactly what the best case scenario was, which is he's completely embraced his role as a playmaker. You do get those defensive flashes and those flashes of the old Dwayne Wade. And he's just a smart player. And that's exactly what the team needed. It's been very, very encouraging. But Matt, we really do appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on. A lot of great insights. I'm now going to be thinking about Tristan Thompson and the Cavs pick for Gasol basically all night. So I have you to thank for that.
Dustin looks terrible today. What happened? It was another Gasol night.
Pretty much. That's going to take me out. But to all our listeners, we do appreciate all the support. Remember that you can support the show by supporting our sponsors, draft.com. You can still get a free game after your first deposit when you use promo code TheChaseDown. Remember, on draft, you are 80% more likely to win than on other daily fantasy leagues. I love it. Carter loves it. We go head to head, and I'm sure we'll be doing other draft publicly on Twitter. The other way to support the show is by leaving a review. Go to iTunes, give us 5 stars, give us a review, subscribe. It's the best way to make sure you're not missing a show. So thanks to all our listeners, and as always, go Cavs. Mm-hmm.